Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real. Okay, I want to start off this podcast talking about China and Hong Kong. And then I have a lot of, a few things to say about the global economy and what happened today in the stock market. So let's get right into it. Today's podcast is From Opium Wars to Currency Wars. In 1842, the Qing Dynasty surrendered Hong Kong to the British Empire following the First Opium War, making Hong Kong a British Crown colony. Then, in 1898, the British pledged to cede it back to China after 100 years had passed. Excluding the period of Japanese occupation during the Second World War, Hong Kong remained under British rule until its peaceful handover to the Chinese in 1997. The transition was structured by the Sino-British Joint Declaration, which guaranteed Hong Kong would remain a capitalist economy and have its own currency and separate legal system until the year 2047. This rubric was known as One Country, Two Systems. Regrettably, the current conflict between Hong Kong and the mainland was inevitable because the people of Hong Kong have a history of thinking of themselves as a part of a Western-style democracy, one that has been prospering for 177 years and would never easily relinquish their freedoms. The salient question now is, will China send the People's Liberation Army into Hong Kong to quell protesters that were originally incensed about a fugitives bill that would allow Hong Kong citizens to be extradited to China? President Trump has already indicated, sadly I might add, that he is behind President Xi. And with American Sino relations at a low point, the time may be ripe for China to expedite the absolute complete annexation of Hong Kong, both territorially and systematically. Until very recently, Hong Kong has enjoyed the quasi-independence from mainland China, growing economically both as a manufacturing hub and one of the financial capitals of the world. But unhappiness with the proposed extradition bill with China has led to civil unrest. Yes, civil unrest, which I feel could be pervading across the globe very soon, unfortunately. Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, agreed to suspend the bill, but not remove it entirely, and that has simply reminded the people of their eventual fate. The truth is, it was never going to be possible for the 7.4 million free citizens of Hong Kong to change the way that the communist autocratic regime controls 1.4 billion mainland Chinese. Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China, believes resolution is on the horizon for China. Revolution. Starting with Hong Kong. And these seeds of revolution have already begun. On Monday, August 5th, defying Beijing, seven districts in Hong Kong participated in a general strike, leading to the cancellation of hundreds of flights and the eventual shutdown of the main airport. The civil unrest in China has also started to impact the value of its currency, the Chinese currency, that is. The yuan broke below the important level of 7 yuan to the dollar recently. China's central bank suggested that the depreciation was in response to Mr. Trump's decision to extend punitive tariffs to the entire value of China's exports. However, China is not manipulating its currency lower, as Trump would suggest. Rather, China is desperately trying to keep it from crashing. Hayman Capital's Kyle Bass believes that if the Chinese yuan were to trade freely, it could plummet by as much as 30 to 40%. The Chinese government is working hard to prevent a free-fall currency collapse. And it's unclear if the 7 yuan breach was a test to see if markets would allow the yuan to devalue slightly without experiencing massive capital flight out of China. Because China now has both a fiscal and current account deficit, it is in desperate need of U.S. dollars for trade and debt repayments. And the truth is, large Chinese commercial banks have become even more dependent on dollar-denominated debt. The Bank of China's annual report showed dollar debt stood at 2.21 trillion yuan, $314 billion, at the end of 2018, up 12% on the year. However, as dollar debt has increased, dollar assets remain unchanged at 1.67 trillion yuan, bringing the dollar debt to dollar asset gap up 81% to 536.5 billion yuan. However, despite China's woes, many market pundits believe that China's over $3 trillion in currency foreign reserves leaves both China and its currency out of danger. But these pundits may be surprised to know that it's not just China skeptics that question the potency of China's foreign reserves. According to the IMF, China's reserves have been below the recommended levels since 2017. Despite its substantial foreign reserves, which have surged by 430% from 2004 to 2015, money supply and short-term debt have increased even faster, growing 860% and 780% respectively over the same period. China's total debt has skyrocketed to $40 trillion, over 300% of GDP, from around just $2 trillion back in 2000. That is unprecedented in the history of the planet. Not surprisingly, the amount of bad loans has increased alongside the pace of state-directed unproductive debt. Official data shows that the amount of non-performing commercial loans has increased and reached the level of 2.16 trillion yuan, a 16-year high. Now, this number is still a very low percentage of total loans outstanding, but that is because the government ameliorates the default process by papering over the NPLs. The People's Bank of China may be forced to soon print tens of trillions of yuan to bail out its faltering banking system, which should send the value of its currency plunging from its current precarious position. If the pace of yuan declines were to continue, it would force China's major trading partners to devalue along with the yuan or risk an export-led recession. This would put a tremendous strain on the ability of these countries to carry their inventory, their tremendous amount of dollar-based debt. Chinese firms alone have $1.5 trillion of dollar-denominated debt. That's just Chinese firms, according to the Institute of International Finance. The trade war is increasing the difficulty of keeping the Chinese economy and currency levitated. According to the Nikkei Asian Review, more than 50 multinationals from Apple to Nintendo to Dell are working on relocating their manufacturing bases out of China to escape the punitive tariffs placed by the U.S. American personnel computer makers Hewlett Packard and Dell are considering moving up to 30% of their network production in China to Southeast Asia. Apple is reviewing the cost implications of moving up to 30% of its production capacity from China to India. With a large outflow of economic activity, China is going to have a harder time feigning its illusory 6% growth rate. Any Pantonomics follower knows I have maintained for some time that China's economy is built on an enormous debt bubble that will one day burst. Europe, Japan, and the U.S. share much of the same fate. This will have hugely negative ramifications for the global economy. China looks like it is now a gentle gust of wind from having its entire house of cards blow. The Red Nation is now having to fight three wars simultaneously: a trade war with the United States, amalgamating the freedom-loving citizens of Hong Kong into the communist dictatorship of the mainland, and a currency crisis that would destabilize the Eastern Bloc nations and take the developed Western world down with it. Investors need to factor in the natural progression of the dynamics between China, Hong Kong, and the free world. That is, from opium wars to currency wars to military wars. China has labeled the protesters as terrorists that must be severely punished, quote, without leniency, without mercy, close quote. This war might not be contained to China and its territories much longer. The political, economic, and military tensions between China and the West are intensifying rapidly. Now, I apologize to you if I rushed through that prepared portion of the comments, and I think I did. And I did it for good reason, because I have a lot to talk about and I don't have much time at all today to do it. So I'm going to probably try to truncate this in as, you know, as quickly as I can. But, and this is not the, the non-prepared portion of the podcast, which is what I enjoy the most. You have to get to the through the prepared portion, because there's so many data points and so many things that I have to tell you. One of the things I had to get across to you is that the China-Hong Kong situation is going to get much, much worse, probably before it hands over to China officially in 2047. I mean, when they start to turn over their political and economic and judicial system to China. So that's going to be a, that's a huge problem. We also have Brexit that's still an issue, though it's not the salient issue. But listen, if you are still wondering if what I've been warning about is actually true, and I've been warning about what's about to take place for the last couple of years, and I warned about a slowing global economy that would eventually invert the yield curve and eventually cause a dramatic default, a bond market revolt like we've never before seen. And you could see this has played out. So what is now in the rearview mirror is the fact that we've had slowing global growth for the last couple of years, exactly as I indicated we would. We now have an inverted yield curve from the 210 spread, which caused an 800-point plunge in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Most averages were down at 3%. Now, that's right. If you own stocks today, you lost 3% of your portfolio in one darn day. And the reason is that people are like shocked. Oh, my God, the yield curve might invert. Well, I've been warning about it. In fact, the yield curve has been inverted for 3 months. So I show you how silly the kids are in control of the machines. The kids that grew up, you know, the Poindexters who program algorithms to read the stock market, were surprised today that the yield curve inverted, the typical 210 yield curve inversion. But the yield curve has been inverted for over 3 months. The 10-year note has been lower than the Fed funds rate for three freaking months. I told you about that. I've warned about it. It happened, and now it's causing the algorithms to vomit, to puke. But what I want to explain to you is you're going to have a parade and a charade of market pundits come on CNBC and tell you that you shouldn't be worried about the yield curve because it's inverted for technical reasons, because you see the European central bank and the Japan central bank are printing so much money that's forcing our yields lower. Well, yeah, that's true. That is true. But why wouldn't they be buying the short end too? And yeah, the Fed is holding up the short end of the yield curve. But let me ask you a question. Do you really think it matters why the yield curve inverted? Let's just say it is inverted for technical reasons, not the reasons, not even to ask yourself the reason why would the central banks of Japan and Europe be so frenzied about purchasing bonds, because they know they're in a deflationary depression. They know that's where they're headed. That's why they're printing so much money. And that's where we're headed too. We're still going to deflate first before we have this skyrocketing blow up of the bond market. But the yield curve is inverted. It doesn't really matter why it's inverted. The reason why it's inverted isn't as important as the fact that borrowing on the short term costs more than lending it out on the longer end. And when that happens, money supply dries up. You're not going to go out and, if you're a shadow bank, you are not going to go out and borrow money from a bank, a primary dealer, and purchase a collateralized loan obligation or a mortgage-backed security with little to no margin in it, with all the risk that's entailed in there. You're just not going to do it. There's no incentive to do it. So that's why an inverted yield curve is so important. And if you still, and I don't think you are, I mean, clients that have been with me a long time and new clients understand that what I've been warning about has now coming to fruition. But If you need more evidence, take a quick tour of the global economy. Did you know that the German economy is now in contraction? Did you know that Chinese industrial production for July hit a 17-year low today? Do you know that Japanese machine tool orders were down in July by 33% from last year? Now, you know that I just told you the 210 spread on treasuries inverted today for the first time since 2007. That is, for Wall Street and for the Poindexter programmed algorithms, an official recession warning. And as I told you, the more important Fed funds rate 10-year spread has been inverted for almost 4 months. You can expect an official recession to begin in, or within, I should say, the next few quarters at the latest. So we're talking about mid-2020 at the latest. Why you should care? Because the major averages lose between 35, if things are just, you know, if it's an average recession, 35%, or if it's a really bad one, 80%, depending on how extended they are above the economy. Well, let's see. In 2001, when the NASDAQ bubble burst, that total market cap was 148% of GDP. Do you know where it was last week? 148% of GDP. So, historically speaking, you could lose 80% in not only the NASDAQ, but the S&P 500 this time around based upon what happened the last time we had a recession. And as I said, this time the averages are much more overvalued than they were in 2007. And the economy is also the most leveraged it has ever been. Now, I know I probably went long on this podcast, so forgive me, but I just want to close by saying, listen, the Penta portfolio clients didn't lose any money today, okay? And that's because I've been stressing to you that the ephemeral and ersatz gains of earlier this year were just really taking back the loss and the plunge in December. The Dow, the NASDAQ, the S&P, major averages are lower than they were a year ago. And this is just beginning. So if you don't have your money with a money manager that hedges and models the economy, hedges against a downturn and models the economy in the respect of the dynamic between inflation, deflation, and growth, then you are going to be in serious trouble. I'm proud to announce that my clients have no such concerns. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.